Welcome to the SOAP Bible Study Series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We're starting a brand new book this week and next week.
Yes, we are.
And finishing them both in 2 weeks.
We are. Huge books. Big
Huge,
books.
Long books. At least 9 chapters combined.
Yep. So what are they?
We're going to do 1 Timothy and Titus. 1 Timothy and Titus.
Nice. 2 books, they kind of fit together.
Lots of overlap between, you know, when we think of overlapping books, Ephesians and Colossians, definitely, sometimes called sister books.
Right.
But 1 Timothy and Titus really have a lot of similarity.
Yeah. Okay, so we know we're going to be in 1 Timothy, and we're going to be in that all this week.
This week,
Yeah, and so we got to step back a little bit, you know, what it's about, who's it written for, all that kind of fun stuff. And we know that Paul was the apostle to the Gentiles, right? That's his job.
Yes.
So his whole goal and what he did was he would go into a new area, find the biggest population, and start preaching there. And his goal was to convert Gentiles to Christianity. And once he got so many, it was like, well, we should build a church here too, or not build, but we should have a church here too.
Interestingly, he theologically and practically, he always started with the Jews. Even though he was the apostle to the Gentiles, he went to the synagogues first, started with the Jews. They had a background in, of course, the Bible and everything. So preached Jesus as the Messiah to them. And then sort of have a built-in following, if at all possible, that then
well, at least people that understood where Jesus came from, right? They got the background.
Right, yeah. He could open and say, Isaiah said this and whatever, and they're like, oh, yeah, sure enough, he did.
All right. So on one of his mission trips, Paul went to a city called Ephesus, and he converted people, and they ended up starting a church there. Mm-hmm. And after a while, Paul's job wasn't to run the church. That wasn't what he was up for, but he couldn't just leave either, right? Because the church would just fall apart.
Yeah.
So he came up with a brilliant idea, maybe God did, of bringing a young man in. And he and Paul would work together for a while. Paul would leave. This man would take over Paul's position. So again, he wouldn't be running the church, but he would be teaching people in the church, establishing policies, either picking or certainly helping to influence the elders and deacons that are going to be part of the church, and get the church up and running.
Yeah.
Right. And then he would also exit too.
Yeah. And so this was, well, that was the plan. That was the plan, is that he should be able to exit.
Right.
It didn't quite happen that way. But this is really, that's a really important point that you make, because sometimes 1st, 2nd Timothy and Titus are called pastoral letters or pastoral epistles. Yeah. And Timothy and Titus they're assumed to be pastors of these churches. And they weren't. They weren't. They were really Paul's apostolic representatives. They had a role that we don't have today over the church. And like you said,
well, it's kind of like outside consultant.
Yeah.
Coming in, teaching somebody how to build a business and run a business. I'm not going to be here. You know, you have to do this, but I think you should adopt these things.
Yeah. And some of the stuff was directly from Paul. It's like, this
thou shalt.
Yeah, thou shalt. This is exactly what needs to happen. And others was, I can guide you. I can, you know, give you some reference and everything. Now, this brings up the a little bit of a debate as far as when was 1 Timothy written. A lot of people place the three letters, 1st, 2nd Timothy, Titus, sort of all together at the end of Acts, actually after the end of Acts. You can definitely put 2nd Timothy out there, maybe Titus. I'm part of a small contingent that doesn't see 1 Timothy that late. We'll find out as we go through the book, the letter. He's a young man.
Right.
He seems to be inexperienced, which is not the case, obviously, later on. He's been with Paul for a long time. People are looking down on him. He's got a lot of nervousness and anxiety. Right. He's
seems
ready
sickness
to
too, maybe from this.
Yeah. He seems really, really overwhelmed with this, which, I mean, can that happen later on? Yes, of course. Yeah. But with all of the things together, it seems like it's probably a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to put this one a little bit earlier, where the church was still relatively new, and some of the things that he was trying to put into place were not already there and then fallen apart. He was trying to recreate it, but actually very early on in the life of the church. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so in chapter 1, Paul starts right off the bat telling Timothy he has to fight false teachings that are already happening in the church in Ephesus. And it seems that some of the people wanted to follow the Mosaic law. So it goes to what you said. These would have probably been Jews who converted to Christianity, but want to bring what they had lived with their whole life into Christianity.
Yeah. And probably because Ephesus was such a terrible place, they wanted to protect, you know, what they had. You can't have these outside influences coming in. Well, fine, we'll just make bad inside influences then.
Right. Nobody will want to come in. Yeah. So Paul continually fights with Ephesus and other churches on this topic. And Paul reminds Timothy that Jesus taught about faith. Yeah. And that ends that discussion right there. Mm-hmm. Paul reminds Timothy that the law is good if somebody uses it legitimately. Mm-hmm. And then Paul reminds Timothy about mercy.
Yeah.
And he does this in a couple ways. One, Paul brings up what he did.
Yeah.
You know, Paul's background was not great. He was a Jew, and he fought against Christianity and was involved with at least the stoning of Stephen, if not others.
Yeah, he tried to destroy the church every way he could early on, right?
Jesus changed him.
No other way to say it.
Yeah, exactly. And Paul's like, it was through his mercy that this happened. Mm-hmm. And so I can hear him saying, so you got to give people some breaks too. You know, I was given a huge break. You got to give some people breaks.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the things is, how do you know when to give somebody a break, and how do you know when to cut them off?
Yeah.
And if somebody would write down the answer to that, that'd be great.
What's interesting is at the end of chapter one, he mentions two guys name.
Yep.
He's like, these guys have gone so far away from the faith. They've shipwrecked their faith, is the term he used. He's like, they need to be excommunicated, kicked back out into Satan's world until they figure out.
Yep, figure it out. Right.
That, you know, what the truth is.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. Paul ends this chapter by building Timothy up. And Paul says, Timothy has to fight the good fight. He's got to hold firm in the faith, have good conscience, things that you brought up. I mean, he's young, inexperienced. Yeah. We're going to see this kind of come through.
He needs a lot of encouragement. And 1st and 2nd Timothy both, this is where some of the overlap between the two letters are, because there could be several years between these two letters if, you know, I'm on the right side of the dating of things.
Yeah.
and we find that this is a really nervous guy, timid, Timothy, and he needs a ton of encouragement. And Paul says, don't quit. Don't quit. Don't quit. It feels like as you read this, you get this sense that he's ready to just throw in the towel.
Definitely. I'm done. Maybe not in this letter, but 2 Timothy especially, right?
Yeah. And what ends up happening, by the way, and we don't really get into this in either 1st or 2nd Timothy, you have to go into church history, is that Timothy stayed in Ephesus. His the rest of his ministry basically was headquartered in Ephesus. He was in and out a little bit, but he was martyred. In Ephesus, he was beaten to death by people with clubs in Ephesus there. So there was a reason for him to be fearful, you know, because it was a hard, hard, hard ministry there. Right. And it ended up costing him his life. So I'm not saying, you know, well, you have nothing to worry about.
Right.
But Paul apparently wanted to say, you need to be, I mean, kept building him up, like you said.
Well, too much timidness takes away.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially in that role.
Right. All right, so chapter 2, Paul asks for prayers for all people, that they may have a peaceful and quiet lives in godliness and dignity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what everybody wants, right? And then Paul points out that there's one God, one intermediary between God and humanity, that being Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
He also points out that he was appointed a preacher, an apostle, and a teacher of the Gentiles in faith and truth.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Because Timothy is effectively being Paul while Paul's away. So Paul had to remind him, this is what my job was, and these are the shoes that you're filling while I'm gone. You know, I'll be back. I don't know when. I'll be back. But this is what you're supposed to be doing, you know, while I'm gone.
Right. So, now, in chapter 2, Paul's talking to specific people throughout, especially throughout that chapter. Yeah. And he does it throughout the whole letter.
Yeah.
So this first category of people, we'll just say, were the men.
Yeah.
Right. Told the men to pray. He's telling Timothy what to do, how to act. And the second section is going to be about women.
Yeah.
So he says women must exercise self-restraint, modesty, and self-control. And maybe he got that from Timothy, right? So you could think that Timothy wrote a letter to Paul, here's all my problems.
Yeah.
One, there's some women in the church that are causing some distractions or whatever.
Or whatever,
So Paul seems to be addressing, and we'll see that in a couple cases. Paul also says that women should be identified by the good works they do versus the expensive clothing that they wear.
Yeah, not that they can't have nice clothing or expensive or whatever, but that's not what should set them apart.
Yeah.
Right? Their beauty should come from their character, not just an external, you know, outside look, right?
So the big point in this chapter is, and this is where females especially have problems. Paul doesn't allow a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man.
Yeah.
And he gives two reasons for this, or a couple of reasons for this. The first he gives is because Adam was formed first, right? So man was formed first. And then also at the same time, or at the fall, Eve was the one who was fully deceived.
Yeah, not Adam. Right.
Right.
So part of this is, we have to remember, this is the context of the local church. It doesn't mean that I, as a man, can never learn anything from a woman ever in any sphere of my life or whatever. Well, that's just silly, you know, can't do that. But because of what he's going to do in this letter, outlining church structure and government structure and everything, chapter 3 and 5, we'll talk about other groups, right?
Right.
He says, listen, there has to be a structure here. And one of the biggest pushbacks that we hear today is, well, okay, but that was in Ephesus. You know, there was a cultural thing in Ephesus and the women there and everything. And that sounds like a really good argument until what you pointed out,
yeah.
He didn't make a cultural argument.
Right. He went all the way back to the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. He went back to creation. He went back to the fall long before Ephesus ever came into thing. If he wanted to make a cultural argument, then we would say, yeah, that was for Ephesus. It's not for today. This is timeless. This is a timeless truth. And you know, yeah, it's a lot of pushback and a lot of people, you know, don't like it.
Right.
But that's what it says. Let me say one more thing here. Verse 15 always gets a ton of questions and we really don't have time in this video.
That's why I just
to go, it's really sort of a longer discussion or explanation. But if you really want to know about verse 15 and what that means, childbearing and she'll be saved and all this stuff, just ask, put it in the comments or just reach out and ask. We're happy to explain it. Just it's too long for what we're trying to do here.
Yeah. Okay. Chapter 3. So chapter 3 gives the qualifications for this group of people called overseer. Mm-hmm. We find out later, they're also called elders. You know, today more likely called pastors.
Yeah. But those three terms are interchangeable in the New Testament.
Right. And they're a group of people, not a overseer and,
right,
you know, a group of elders.
Yeah.
And then there's also a second category of people in there, deacons,
yeah,
that he's going to talk about too. So elders are the highest leaders of the church. They're responsible for the running of the church and the direction of the church.
Yep.
They're going to need help. Deacons are there to help.
Yep.
And you can almost think of deacons as the day-to-day operation people,
yeah,
where the elders are saying, we want to go this way, and the deacons are helping us get that way.
Yeah, one of the big things is that, you know, in today's modern structure, we have seniors and juniors and associates and assistants and, you know, all this other stuff. The Bible doesn't lay any of that out. It says there are pastors. A church has pastors, elders, whatever term you want to use. They're all equal. They do have assistants, and that's the deacons. So the deacons would be assistants to the pastors, not assistant pastors necessarily, but they would be assistants to the pastors and have a specific role for caring for and doing the ministry toward the congregation that the congregation can't necessarily do within itself.
Right. So as a church, so now we have the elders and the deacons, and it's vital that the people that are appointed to each, that those are taken seriously.
Yeah.
So every effort has to be made to put only qualified people in these positions. Literally, the direction of the church is riding on this.
Yeah.
Right. If you just think about Timothy or Ephesus, there are false teachers.
Yeah.
Right. So there are people in teaching positions that are saying things that are not right.
Yeah.
Put that person in an elder. Now that person has control, at least somewhat, of where the church is going in direction.
Yeah. Ideally, if everything was done perfectly, you know, one rogue pastor or elder should be able to be contained and corralled and corrected by the rest of the team.
But not in a brand new church.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Paul lists both a number of traits for elders and deacons, and we can see that they are clearly thought out. They build on each other, and they accurately represent the position
that
needs to be.
Yeah. Let me point out one more thing. I want to come back to the you know, women leadership issue, because that, you know, part of that, well, women can't be pastors and whatever. A lot of people focus on, well, women cannot be pastors, but that's not really the complete statement. The complete statement is only qualified men can be pastors and deacons, right? Elders and deacons. Right. It's not a gender issue. It's a qualification issue, right? So if only qualified men, we're not saying women cannot be. It's nobody who's unqualified. One of the qualifications is a gender thing, but lots of men also cannot be,
right,
because they're not qualified.
Right.
It's a qualifications issue, not a gender thing.
Yeah. So an example of one of the rules, an elder must be an able teacher.
Yeah.
So that means, that implies that they have a good handle of the scripture. They can teach people, they're knowledgeable, you know, all that. And so that point alone, really a number of people are disqualified right there.
Yeah.
And a number of people are like, I don't
want to
teach.
I don't want to,
I don't want to be an elder.
Okay. Whether I'm disqualified or not. Right. Yeah, yeah. I don't want to. And that that word disqualified sounds mean.
Yeah, it sounds terrible.
It's not meant to be mean. Right. It's just like, yeah, like you said, this is an important role, and we need to make sure that the people who fill it, you know, meet this list of mostly character traits. Character traits.
Yeah. Chapter four, Paul focuses on Timothy himself. We see that he's young in this chapter, right, and that some at the church feels that he's inexperienced. So exactly what you were talking about earlier. So Paul gives him instructions and is trying to build him up. And though this is directed to Timothy, it works for us today.
Yeah, too. Absolutely. A lot of the stuff in these letters are timeless principles for churches. Yeah.
Right. Paul starts this chapter again by talking about false teachers. So it's a big deal in there. Mm-hmm. And it seems Ephesus has already had this. And, you know, Paul started his letter by talking about it. But Timothy needs to continue to study. He needs to continue to read the scriptures so he can identify and remove false doctrine.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only way. You have to have scripture to back you up.
Yeah.
Because I can say to you, you know, that's not right. You know, I don't believe that's right.
Yeah.
We're so not talking about
proving.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Exodus chapter 1, verse 12 says you can't do what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. It can't be about opinions and preferences and, you know, feelings and everything. Right. It has to be about scripture. What does scripture say?
Right.
That's the only way to refute false teaching.
Right. Now, they talk about the specific case that comes up, and it seems to be on the topic of marriage and the topic of foods, which I assume is which food you can eat and which food you can't eat.
Yeah.
These seem to be a little trivial. But they're not.
They're not. Right?
Because they are trying to deviate from what scripture says.
Yeah.
So it's that one small step in the wrong, you know, on the wrong path.
Yeah.
And now you're going down the wrong path.
And both of those were a major cultural thing in Ephesus. And we'd have to go back and look at the history of Ephesus and everything to find out why did Paul, you know, use these two things as examples, because they were huge to them. We look at them as trivial.
Yeah.
Right. But to them, it's like, if we can get these two things settled, everything's going to be great.
Yeah, right. Right. Paul also tells Timothy to guard himself so that he doesn't get caught up in the wrong doctrine, and that he needs to watch his spiritual health too,
yeah,
which again, for a pastor, not everybody thinks about the pastor's spiritual health.
Yeah. Just assume, right?
Yeah. So Paul ends the chapter telling Timothy he must command and teach these things.
Yes.
Right? He's getting a little forceful with Timothy here.
Yeah.
Tells him, don't let anybody look down on you because of your age. But he needs to set the example by for believers by what he says, his speech, his conduct, his love, his faithfulness, and his purity.
Yeah.
Whew. Yeah. And it's a big job.
Yeah. He mentions don't neglect the spiritual gift that you have. So again, you see some of that. Timothy, yep, come on.
And building
come
them
on.
Up.
Yep. You've got to engage here.
Yeah. And he tells him, make sure the scriptures are read publicly.
Yeah.
And that the scriptures should also be explained to people along with the application.
Yeah.
Right. So exhortation.
Sounds like an important thing.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody needs to hear and learn.
Right. All right. So we end this week on chapter 5. We're only going through verse 16, and then we'll pick up 17 through the end next week. Paul starts by saying that the church should be a family of families,
yeah,
which is kind of cool, right? So everybody should be looking at the older man as a father figure and the older woman as a mother figure, and then sisters and brothers,
yeah,
in there also,
yeah,
which is kind of a cool way to look at the church.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in chapter 3, he refers to it as the church as the household of God. So he's already laid this foundation of a family structure. So it's not all, you know, elders are the managers and everything. It's not all management and everything. There is direction, like a father leads a family. So there has to be leadership, but it's different than a corporation, right?
Yeah. He spends the next three to 16 verses talking about widows.
Yeah.
Right. So also a piece of the family, mm-hmm, that comes in there. And during Paul and Timothy's time, widows seem to be the forgotten segment. It can certainly happen in today's churches too.
Yeah.
The early church in Jerusalem had a big problem. There were two different sets of widows, and they were being treated differently.
Yeah.
And it was causing a huge problem in the church.
Yeah.
Paul gives a set of rules, and maybe those rules that there were seven, maybe pre-deacons took over the problem and resolved it. But maybe these are the rules that they came up with.
Or, yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
But widows should only be on the list if they don't have children or grandchildren to help them.
Yeah.
These people should help repay their grandmother or mother first. Mm-hmm. And if a believing woman has a widow in her family, she should help.
Yeah.
So the goal isn't that the church takes over with every widow.
Right.
So there's a list of qualifications here, and only a subset of these people then fall into, okay, these people the church should help.
Right.
And it's what you would think, right? Older, you know, older than 60. Yeah. Paul actually puts an age on there.
Yeah, which is interesting.
Yeah. Also that was the wife of one husband, mm-hmm. and her reputation was for good works. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are pretty big things.
Yeah.
And only then should the church take over if there's nobody else that can help her for that.
Yeah. He also mentions specifically in relation to younger widows, he says, I want you to get married again.
Right.
Okay. So wife of one husband can't mean married only once. There's something else going on in there.
Yeah.
It's a similar phrase with pastors and deacons in chapter 3. But he talks about them taking an oath.
Right.
So he refers to an oath. So it seems like maybe once a woman reaches this point where she needs care from the church, no one is left in her family to help her, that she makes an oath with the church or an agreement with the church where she's already been doing ministry. She's already been taking care of people. Now this becomes her ministry. Maybe she helps the deacons.
Yeah, I'm not going to get married anymore. I'm not going to look to get married anymore. I am going to... do work at the church, and in return, you know,
the church is going to take care of me.
Right.
Yeah. Which I think is,
it's
a fantastic plan. I mean, I love that it's very practical in here, right. You know, that way.
Right.
So,
and this is where we end.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's actually a good thing. We
it is.
End on a good note, taking care of people.
I was going to say for once. Not every time.
Not all the time. Right. Yeah. Lots of false teachers. We're not ending on false teachers. We're ending on taking care of people and everything. Yeah. So that's good. That's good. So next week we'll finish up chapter 5 here, and we'll finish 1 Timothy and go into Titus and see some of this overlap, right?
Right.
So really quick survey through these two letters, but you sort of have to do that. If you take too long, you get into the weeds and you sort of forget the big picture, right? So 2 weeks in these two books, lots of things to ask questions about, lots of things to bring up. So feel free to reach out at any time and ask your questions. Share some of the things that you see. Like, oh, you didn't say this. This was pretty cool. I saw this. We'd love to hear those as well. Subscribe, follow, and share. And we will pick up here, middle of chapter 5, when we come back next time.